A Christian mind is not one that is trained to think only about Christian topics. It is a mind that has learned to think about everything from a Christian perspective.
We have to understand God rightly to know Him intimately.
It is the gospel that orients my thinking on every other issue.
You can know, if you're trusting in Jesus, that every single atom in this universe is working for your good.
That's why I'm sticking with Jesus. Not because He always does what I want Him to do. I'm sticking with Jesus because I just haven't found any better alternative.
Black Berea Podcast.
Are we live?
Episode 5.
Is there?
No. Yes. Episode 5. This is very embarrassing.
Yeah,
episode 5. Episode 5 of Black Berea Podcast. In the room with Mary and Femi. And we've got 2 special guests. Mm. Zoe's, I won't bait where Zoe's at, but she's not in the country.
She's not in the country.
Where's Louis? Was Louis in church today?
Louis was in church, you know.
Okay.
He had other plans.
Fair enough. Just making a fair enough. I see how it's going. Okay. But now we got 2 special guests. Big fan of these guys, to be fair.
Oh,
you are in. Samson and Joshua. Yeah, clap it up. How you guys doing?
Our first guest this season, isn't it?
Yeah, first guest.
Crazy.
Honor.
I've been good. I've been well, man. How you lot been?
I've been good. Mm. Yeah, busy. And I'm traveling this week, so I'm excited.
Ooh, way good.
When are you not traveling?
Don't try it. I'm going for a specific reason. I'm not really, but I'm lying.
Mission trip.
Mission trip. No, I'm lying. Okay. One day. Have you been on a mission trip before?
Nah, not yet. Soon.
Josh, I ain't been still. I ain't been. I would go though.
I thought your man were really like zealous for the Lord. We had a heart for the
Lord. What about you? Don't do that.
I thought you were serious.
Oh my God. Yes, man. Was zealous, guys.
Have I been to a mission trip? Yeah, Stratford.
Oh my God.
Hackney.
Hackney.
South Brixton.
First game.
Where they need a Lord.
Ilford is Jesus.
This Christ. That is hilarious.
Good. Interesting story. I do know when I first met you guys.
Yeah.
So my pastor was definitely ranting about Samson. About, oh, you need to meet Samson. I think I was away. Then I met you guys on the same day. And I feel it was such a beautiful conversation. Because we spoke about so many things. Got to know you guys.
Yeah, that was good.
Like and I remember just thinking, wow, these guys are young, but they're so passionate for the Lord. And Zoe was actually there. And I remember me and Zoe walking away saying, that like our hearts are encouraged, man.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Like it was a beautiful evening. Like, and you guys are young guys, which we'll kind of explore. But it was like, God, like look at these young guys, like who love Jesus and love God's people. And it was just, it was so encouraging. So I thought, got to bring you guys on the pod and talk to you guys about a whole host of things.
Privileged.
Come on. How would you describe yourself in like 30 seconds or like in 3 words?
Nah, you go first.
Tough questions.
In 30 seconds.
Or how would your friends describe you?
I don't even know how. Oh, we got to give them the mastermind question.
We should. We'll do the mastermind question after as well.
Okay, 30 seconds, I would say. Or could I just say like a word? Okay, I would just say a communicator.
Communicator.
Mad.
That's what I was saying.
Right, you've always been a communicator.
Yeah, I think so. Mm. Even too much.
I hear that. What about you?
How would they describe me? They'll describe me as. How my friends describe me? They'll say I'm interesting guy.
Sounds so negative. Interesting.
No. I think they'll say that I'm someone who is a passionate individual.
Mm.
When I like something and love something, I really like it and love it. And people that are around me, they'll know about it.
Yeah.
Similarly to Samuel, I like to communicate.
Samuel.
Wow. Samson.
I told you,
I don't know this guy. I don't know him. He's not my friend.
He used to follow me from school every single day.
Because one of my boys is called Sam. And then his first 3 is Sam.
So sometimes
I forget the son. Sorry, my bro. Exactly. I've just been in the script, isn't it? Sorry.
Wow.
Passionate guy, loves to communicate, loves to be around people. But at the same time, they'll probably call me surprisingly introvert as well. Like, I love to be alone as well.
Mm.
Be by myself and think. So, yeah.
Okay.
So what would we did this mastermind question last season. So
they're young, by the way. You gotta tell them what mastermind is.
Jeez, do you guys know what mastermind
is? Nah, come on, man.
We're getting bad. You know what? Even the fact that they know who Getz is surprising because one of my colleagues at work. So I was like, oh yeah, have you heard Getz's album? He's like, who's that?
No. But genuinely.
Your colleague is Asian.
Your colleague is a problem. Not the.
Yeah, probably. It's not them. It's not the age. It was him. It was definitely.
But you guys know what mastermind is.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
So if you were to go on Mastermind, what would your specialist subject be?
These guys are going to say the Bible.
Nah, it can't be.
Okay, it can't be that, yeah?
It can't be.
I mean, if it is, it is, isn't it? Some people are super saved.
I've
literally been studying every day, so that's probably what I would, I don't know, or either that, or I don't know, maybe...
That's such a question.
Like music, or I don't know, maybe...
Or would it be like, because no, people usually segment yeah, they might say, I don't know... But I'm hip-hop not, between 2002, 2005.
But I'm not like crazy, like, because I think I have like my hand in a few things, I'm not like crazy deep into like one thing.
Yeah, but
so I couldn't even say, okay, 2010s to 2020s, I know 100% hip-hop. Like, I can name certain notable things that happened or whatever. Like the other day when Kendrick sent for Cole and Drake.
I heard about that yesterday.
Yeah, I can talk about that and whatever, but... The other stuff I probably won't know as well. Okay. So I don't know. I don't even know.
What about in seminary would you have, like, I don't know, church history between 14th and 16th century?
Okay. Wow. Okay, I would say
in Mastermind it's very like niche.
Yeah, fair. I would say if we're talking church history, I would say church history 6th, 7th century, because I had to do
these guys are nerds, by the way.
600, 700, yeah, so 7th, 8th century, because I had to do a seminar on that recently, actually, the Eastern Orthodox Church, so I had to do a seminar on that, so probably, yeah, because it's at the top of my head.
Okay, something that's not theological, I would say if someone wants to quiz me on the area of, like, calisthenics, or anatomy and physiology... That's my bad.
This guy
is the...
He's the... When we were at the gym together, this guy was, so make sure you put your leg here and put your leg here and then hold it here for 3 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
Now, listen,
do that 3 to 4 times a week. And
I was extra. I used to draw out the anatomy of the heart.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I liked anatomy and physiology. I liked understanding...
What did you do for work?
Oh, I'm an accountant or auditor. So it's nothing to do with that. But
in his spare time.
When I was young. I don't do it anymore, but I love all that. So you quiz me on anything anatomy and physiology related.
Right.
I'm very, there still.
Is completely different answers, because people said like Getz last time. Zoe said Getz.
Tyler the Creator. That's who I'll do. That one I know inside out.
But it's so interesting. So a couple years ago, I think it was in 2019, we had a live show. And the topic was called The Gospel for Millennials. Mm. Just to be clear, because someone always says we say stuff and never explain it. Millennials are those born from, I think it's like early 80s to like mid 90s, like 1990,
yeah, 85. Something like,
And then Gen Z's is from 97 to 2012, 2011.
You guys are young.
So we, at the time, we were talking about, like, I think the context was around with like church attendance declining. Black majority churches at the time were still growing. So we were talking about like, what is it about the gospel, social mobility that is presented to black people that is still very enchanting? And is it the actual gospel, or are there other things that can be actually quite concerning? So that was a conversation that we had at the live show. And I was generally thinking about you guys being Gen Z's, like, what is the gospel for Gen Z's?
So
like, what are the things...
Do you claim Gen Z? Because my little brother is... we had this conversation a couple of weeks ago, actually. He's your age, yeah, exactly your age. And he was like, no, I'm a millennial. I was like, bro, you're not a millennial. And we had to go find out the numbers, because he was convinced he was a millennial. And I was like, no, and then we checked, like, how old you have to be to be a millennial. Obviously, he didn't make the cut. And he was like, oh, man, like, he was disappointed. Do you guys even, like, embrace... the idea that you're Gen Z as opposed
to Gen Z thing, man. I feel like it's just been used as like a title for kids that just don't know anything about about whatever, and that are just on TikTok all the time, and that's what I feel like it's just been used as. That's why I don't really claim it like that. Even me the other day, I realized that I was Gen Z. I thought I was millennial.
But no, because I was literally looking through some statistics like earlier today, and it was like the proportion of those identifying as Christians who are aged 21 to 25 has fallen. Average age of Christians in the UK is 51. With three out of 10 over 65 identifying as Christians. I think it had gone up from 45 to like 51. Under 40s in England and Wales are more likely to declare no religion than Christianity for the first time. But then there's also another statistic that talks about Gen Zs may not like claim a particular like faith, but they believe in like a higher power.
Right.
So thinking about like Generation Z, like what do you think in contrast to like millennials or like older people, you know, kind of like contrast, like, yeah, what do you think were like the key differentiators?
That's a good question.
In terms of why there seems to be like a resurgence of faith or exploration for Gen Zs?
It could be a resistance.
A resistance to it. Yeah. Okay.
Like, what do you guys think?
What's key for us, Gen Zs? I could speak to people that the slightly older Gen Zs.
Mm.
People like me, I would say, I don't know if this will probably relate to millennials as well, but for me growing up, I was able to see the fruitlessness of living a hedonistic lifestyle.
Yeah.
Right. So I was able to see that I had guys around me that were living any which way. Unless you're Christian, you didn't slow. Shout out to John Piper. That man. Right. But I was able to see the fruitlessness of living any which way, which made me think, Hebrew speaks about how we should look at those who taught us, the leaders who taught us a word of faith, and consider the outcome and imitate their faith. So I was like, I'm considering these men, that the outcome of their life, it's not patterning. Let me consider people who I actually look up to and admire, and the type of men I would want to be like and try to follow suit. So I don't usually think generationally, if I'm honest. So I don't know how different this would be for a millennial.
Got you.
But I'm just thinking for me and why people around me that are kind of on the same thing that I'm on, why we are the way we are.
Yeah.
A lot of it is that we've seen the effects of living any which way.
Yeah.
And that it's not like that, which made us think, yeah, let's try and follow a path that seems sort of sensible. And it's of the grace of God as well. Like, I can't tell you why the gospel was compelling to me really at an early age.
Did you guys grow up in church?
Yeah.
I
grew up in church. For me, I grew up in church, but it was an in and out thing. I was a baller back in the day. So it was like
footballer.
Yeah. So sometimes I'm in church, but more time I'm playing football from about the age of 8.
Why don't you make it? It was like a knee. ACL,
MCL, all of that. Yeah, listen, guys. I was hard. I'm telling you, I was good. I was good.
Where did you play?
CDM, right back.
What?
Put me anywhere on the pitch. I'm doing a job. I'm versatile. My coach used to love me, but yeah. So I couldn't really escape this gospel because even though we weren't going to church all the time because I was playing football, the house was very much a Christian home.
Mm.
We're praying every night. It's CC whinings I'm waking up to. It's I don't know. My mom instilled that faith into us from young, or at least certain practices, which made it very difficult for us to escape the grace of God in that sense.
Mm.
So that's why, what was the question? Did we grow up in a church?
Yeah,
I grew up, yes, in a church, but I'm very unchurched. There's a lot of practices I'm not aware of. Mm. I didn't grow up in it like that, but yeah, grew up a Christian.
What about you,
Samson? As in the Christian household or the...
Yeah, both, to be fair.
Yeah, so same for me, grew up in a Christian household. I would have been able to tell you what the gospel was at pretty much every stage of my life. It'd be like, oh, we were sinners, Jesus died for our sins. Mm. But I didn't really believe that like as actual truth and lived that up until like my later teenagers, like between 19, 20. That's when I was like, okay. But in terms of the millennials, to be honest, seeing the statistics are kind of surprising to me because I thought the millennials would have been more like held on to faith more. Maybe it's different for like different ethnicities and that, because if we think about our parents, that generation, I don't see them wavering. I don't see them wavering at all. But if it's for other ethnicities now, I know that there are different challenges that they face when it comes to belief, especially when it comes to Christianity, because especially in the Western world, they've gone through things like the Enlightenment period, the Renaissance period, whatever, where it's like, let's try and see if we can get to the answers ourselves. Like modernism, essentially. Like, we're going to use science, we're going to use all the technology to get to the answers ourselves. And because of that kind of, like, rising, knowledge and trying to get to things ourselves and trying to get things themselves, they get to eventually reject what they used to use to give them peace, joy, love, yeah. because those essentially were the reasons why they were believers. They weren't, they didn't, they weren't Christians because of them actually believing it as truth, but they were Christians because it made them comfortable, yeah. and they found a new thing to make them comfortable. But this guy, I think people of like our particular ethnic background, atheism isn't really common. Like it's not common at all. But I think it's also culturally as well. Like if we look at like traditional practices before Christianity came, like there was just no, there's no concept of there's no God. There's no concept of that. There's no concept of that at all. Like it's never, there's never a thing of, oh, it's just, it was all an accident and whatever, because it just, it doesn't land you there. It doesn't land you there. So I think that's why there's a bit of a, that might be why there's a bit of a difference.
Yeah, for sure. 100%.
There's a point I wanted to add. Thinking generationally now, a thought came to my head. I think our generation are some of the first people that have really grown up with this phone. Really in our hand from the room. And because of that, we are being formed or maybe deformed in such a way that makes devotion just difficult. With this phone, contexts are changing constantly. We're always being introduced to novelty, and when we come to like the scriptures or prayer, any sort of spiritual discipline, it requires a level of slowness, stillness, which we are not being trained to do. So maybe for Gen Z's, like, listen, I remember one time I was praying. I'm not proud to say I'm praying, yeah, and it's like I'm trying to rush through prayer so I can go back and do what I really want to do. Like it's difficult to sit still.
And also I think like in earlier stages of your life, I guess the developmental stages of your life, because I think about my journey, right? I grew up in a Christian household. I also went to Christian, well, not Christian primary school, but I went to Christian secondary school. First time I met like atheist Muslims and really like spent time with them wasn't until sixth form.
Uni really.
Uni really. Like I was exposed to people that, oh, you don't like believe in God, or you're a Muslim, or you're something else, right? I wasn't exposed to it, and I didn't have any other access to worldviews outside of RE and maybe the odd sociology class or whatever. I wasn't exposed to different worldviews in my developmental stages of life. So when I got older and then I was exposed to it, I was already developed some kind of. I was really developed enough to critically assess it, as opposed to just allow it to influence me. Whereas the younger generations, they're again, when you talk about phones and social media, even if you're not physically around them, you can be exposed to that from your phone. So you're seeing so many different worldviews that maybe we didn't have as much access to.
That's so interesting.
When we were younger. And I'm not speaking specifically for my context. There's many people that are in other contexts that maybe if you grew up in, for example, you went to a Muslim school, for example, or you were in a school which is more secular, maybe you were exposed to it. But I personally wasn't. I just wasn't. But if I had a phone and I was on TikTok during secondary school, maybe I would have. But maybe, I would have been exposed to it a bit earlier. And I was a bit more, I guess my thought processes would have been a bit more influenced, then maybe that would have changed. By God's grace, it wouldn't have anyway. But it definitely would have a different impact on the way I looked at my faith, my worldview, if I was exposed to certain things earlier, rather than later. Even to be fair, even when I got to college and I was first exposed to it, it kind of hit me. I was like, oh 100%. Snap! People think differently. Like it isn't just like oh. Obviously, I knew people weren't Christian. I wasn't exposed to it enough to know like how people even got to those points. Like how do you get to a point where you don't believe in God? Or how do you get to a point where you're a different faith? I wasn't exposed to that. Whereas, younger generations, you're exposed to everything. Which in some sense is a good thing, because you don't want people to live in bubbles, per se. But again, when you're young, you're definitely a lot more impressionable.
Impressionable.
To things like that. And I don't think things like social media is helpful. When it comes to that,
you're spinning. TikTok can spin.
TikTok will definitely spin.
TikTok is spinning me.
It can spin.
What did the Bible say?
That's not true.
For me, it jars me though how much misinformation can just spread, man. It's so jarring. Sometimes when I see some of the stuff people say, like they're always talking about this Book of Enoch stuff. That's what a lot of these ones are saying. Oh, did you know there's mysterious verse that wasn't? I'm like, shut up, man.
That voice as well.
There's music in the background. Like, hidden passage.
The music.
It makes me want to throw my phone because I'm like, you guys just haven't Googled. Like, you just
I call it intelligent folly. Like, it's articulated in such a way.
Say that again.
I call it intelligent folly. Like, it's articulated.
Nice trademark that, you know.
Listen, it's articulated in such a way. It sounds good. It sounds so smart. It sounds so clever. And because it's TikTok, it's like a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. You don't have time to really take it in and dissect it. But it's already penetrated your mind, and now you're just left feeling a bit shaken. But if you take the time to assess it, you can break it apart.
The people, many of us, like, I ask questions. We all four of us sitting there grew up in church, right?
And you for yourself, I was in the wild.
You were in KICC.
I shout out to him, man.
But like, I forgot my train of thought. Yes, when you grow up in church, you don't have to critically analyze a lot of stuff. It's just like this is where my parents put, and like again, like I think it was Samson that was saying, like, by God's grace, I can't remember which one of you were saying, but by God's grace, you were even brought up and exposed to that. That's a good thing, right? But also, I didn't even want to say the bad thing, the negative, because I don't think it's negative, but I guess the issue that can cause is sometimes you don't take that time to critically assess what you believe.
Right.
And again, when you are then exposed to ideas that maybe you haven't had to critically analyze before, you could be thrown. And it happens all the time. You just throw it like, oh, what do you mean this? What do you mean this? What do you mean, like, so, I think it is dangerous when that process isn't done. And I think the younger generations, there's just more danger. I think there is more. None of us are excluded from it. Like, all of us can be swayed, and all of us can be like, our faith can be challenged. But I think, when you're young and impressionable, it can be a bit more difficult.
Agreed.
A few things I noted down about Gen Zs. I made an interesting point about younger Gen Zs, older Gen Zs, because statistics kind of are very interesting for that as well. But big one is like a very huge resistance to labels. So kind of like a pushing back to like organized religion. So anything that feels like an institution, there's like a tend to push away from that. I think maybe it's because of what you've seen growing up. So I was even reading an article about, like, there used to be, you know, a lot of the pastors were used to be a bit more mythical. Like, pastor was kind of at a distance, and there's a lot of resistance to that. It's like, now we want someone who's authentic, who's in your face, who you can get to know. You know, obviously, Gen Zs are like more anxious and more depressed, a lot more suicidal ideations than previous generations, unfortunately. Resistance to organized religion, more likely to identify as LGBTQ. So they may think that's like incongruent with being a Christian because they know what I'm going with that. Less of an obsession with work as well. I was even mocking someone this week about like self care and
self development and self love.
I'm just gonna quit. And it's like, Gen Zs are very much very careful of anything to do with settling them.
Anything stressful. No stress.
Of course, guys, it's all general. I'm generalizing.
But I really hear you.
I know Gen Zs that are not like this, but I'm thinking generally these are the things that have been said in comparison.
You know how privileged it is to say, to even wake up and say, oh, my mental health means I want to quit my job. That's a privileged position.
No, 100%.
I'm not even saying it's a bad thing, but like the privilege that you can do that. You should count yourself lucky that you can even that you can even have those thoughts.
100%.
There's many people that can't do that. Like, there's no mental health. And I'm not even saying this is good to prioritize your mental health. No, don't get it twisted. I'm not dismissing it. But just know that you're privileged. Like, I know that you're privileged to be in a land where you can even say that. Where there's many people that, you know, are fighting for jobs. And like, you even think about Nigeria, like, the situation is, not just Nigeria, but many countries across the world where, you know, earning a living is so, so hard. And they'll be fighting to be in some of the positions that we are in and that we complain about every single day. I just think it's helpful to know that and have perspective. That's not to dismiss.
Because the pushback they would probably offer is that everyone should be afforded the ability
100%, yeah, but
work and survival.
1,000,000%, in an ideal world, 100%, but you can't. Just don't. I also understand you are in a privileged position that you can even do that. And it's good, and it's not bad to have privilege, but just understand that it is privilege.
Yeah.
As long as you understand that and you want to take advantage of your privilege that you've been graced with, fine. You're very privileged.
No,
not necessarily
sure.
A bad thing.
For sure. And the other thing around like Gen Zs is that Gen Zs are called to be like the least religious. Previous generations. So just Bible literacy, for example, of like younger people just don't really
know. It's gone.
So like in presenting like to people your age, Christians your age, unbelievers your age, like, what are the like, obstacles and challenges you found in dealing with, like, the younger people?
I think when it comes to the whole institutional thing, I don't even know if, I could be wrong, but I don't even know if it's just purely on, just for religion alone. Because I think it relates to things like even having to work for someone else
as well.
They want to be able to own their own thing and work. Like, I'm a freelancer and like, that's like
they want a topple institution.
It's more of like, they just don't like that idea. And I think maybe it's because they saw their parents who were in a different generation bow down to those institutions in a lot of spaces, maybe too much. And then they saw that it actually costed them. And they didn't really get much back for that. And they're like, well, you're actually suffering for doing this. You're suffering. You're like, your boss doesn't care about you, but you're just doing it because of survival tactics. Like, that's what that whole generation was, isn't it? Like, survival tactics, well, this is the way I'm going to eat. This is what puts food on your plate, so I have to do it and whatever. And I think the younger generation are just like, actually, no. Like, I'm going to use my privilege to be like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do things my own way. But I think at the same time, being faced with difficult things like mental health issues, like depression, those kind of things, which are actually very in line with the advent of social media and those kind of things as well. I think they realize that you just being in this kind of like chaotic, nonsensical universe that has no purpose and no meaning just leaves you way worse than anything else. Yeah. I believe it's because we are built to worship, right? That's how we're designed, isn't it? So they have to look for something to latch onto. So they'll be like, okay, I believe in the creative force. That's something I've heard a lot. I believe in a creative force.
Energy, whatever.
Because they need something to latch onto, to hold on to and be like, okay, I can at least put my heart at rest with that and I can be okay with that. But I don't want to bow down to the institution. And I think, I don't know if some people agree, but this whole thing of, it's not a religion, it's a relationship. So why is it, I don't care what, like, it's a religion. Can we just, it's okay. It's actually okay.
I've spoken about this so many times.
No, I get it. I get it, but I mean, it's a religion. Like, the definition of religion just means worship of, like, a supernatural,
Relationship says done.
But like, I think it, obviously Christianity is different in the sense that it talks about what gets you to worship. Like, we know that it's a supernatural work of the Spirit. It's nothing that we've done. But I am worshiping God like that, and that is of different. That's religion. Do you know what I'm saying? That's religion. But anyway,
bro, I love it.
So then, how do you present that to someone who doesn't want to be, or who's kind of resistant to being religious? How do you present the gospel as kind of moving away from things that they would see as negative religion and presenting the benefits of being a Christian and trusting in the gospel?
This is why systematic theology is my favorite module at seminary. Because what it is about is literally about like tearing the whole building down of like what you understand everything to be and going from as clean a slate as possible, as a blank canvas. Let's start from the beginning. Okay, we're in a world that is overwhelmingly orderly, right? So like, and you just start from there and like build the blocks bit by bit, and you'll be like, okay, this speaks to intentionality, this speaks to like whatever, and then you get somewhere to be like, okay, there is some kind of being that, let's say we don't know the name of the being yet, some kind of being that started everything that we see. And then you just logically get there. And then you realize that what they want is to be able to get there themselves rather than depend on the thinking of the institution and accept what the institution says and be like, okay, cool. But if they get there themselves, then they'll be able to, even the worship that they'll have is even more genuine. They're not going to be doing it because the institution says so. They're doing it because they actually genuinely believe it. And I think it's walking through things with people like that on a step-by-step basis and helping them get there themselves, I think is a better way of, and trying not to use Christianese language. Like, when someone wants to ask you a question, don't just respond with, like terms that we use in like church space or Christian space that might not make sense to them or might not mean anything to them. But like, but use terms that they might use in their normal day-to-day life and whatever stuff like that, and explain the scriptures in that kind of way that speaks to their experience. And I think that could definitely have an impact.
That's really good.
More of an impact, yeah.
Joshua, what's your thoughts on deconstruction?
Deconstruction?
Yeah.
I think it's sad. I think it's unfortunate. I think I understand...
Maybe it's best we define it first.
Yes.
It's just a buzzword for... It's just apostasy, man. That's the way
it is.
I guess deconstruction is literally like the word, right? Like, so you're deconstructing whatever values or beliefs that you had in a specific thing that you once held, and you're almost rebuilding. And some people deconstruct and rebuild to have a stronger faith.
Okay, fair.
So that's why I wouldn't say.
Fair enough. I thought that's the one you were talking about.
But the connotations is generally you had deconstruction, you think, okay, deconstruction and leave the faith. But it's not always the case. Some people use that word in, because I think I've had. And I think many of us have, especially
me myself, during lockdown. Listen, lockdown.
That's what I was talking about.
It got everyone.
A lot of people in lockdown was deconstructed.
It got everyone.
I think we might not use those terms, but in one sense, like even people that have gone from one, for example, one denomination to another denomination, or you know, not so sound church to a sound church, for example, you can say you went through a process of deconstructing what you once believed and now reconstructing into something else, right? Wherever that might be. So it's not necessary, it doesn't have to have any negative connotations. And for some, in some sense, maybe not, I wouldn't use the word, so I wouldn't go and tell someone you need to deconstruct, no, because I just don't, I think there's too much baggage with that word. But it's almost like a, again, critically analyze what you believe. Like, I think that's what it is, really. Do you believe what you believe? What do you actually believe? We spoke about it on the pod, I don't know if it was the last pod or the other one, like, when we were talking about, I think it was when we were talking about cults, and we were saying, like, if we don't understand what our fundamental beliefs are, or we don't critically think about our fundamental beliefs, we could be easily swayed into other faiths or other sects of Christianity or whatever it is, or we might accept people from other sects and say, oh yeah, you're one of us, without realizing, oh, actually they disagree with what we fundamentally, but if you don't critically analyze that or critically break that down, you're more likely to accept that. So I think, yes, I wouldn't go and tell someone to deconstruct, no, but I think it's important for everyone to really think about why you believe what you believe. At some point, I'm not saying this has to be a daily process. Oh my gosh, I went to church today, I've got to read. No. Yeah, but at some point, like in your maturing, you should think about it. Going back to what this deconstruction means, I think it is a breaking down of what you once believed, critically analyzing it, assessing where you are now. And, you know, unfortunately, that leads to a lot of people leaving the faith completely, but it doesn't have to be that.
You started off saying that you thought it was a negative, so maybe you can speak to the
If you deconstruct in such a way that leads you to walking away from the faith, that is sad.
Yeah.
Especially when you see some of the reasons why people are walking away from the faith. It's sometimes Christianity like 101. Some of the things that they're being spun on and are misunderstanding and people are misinterpreting. That's sad. But if you deconstruct in such a way that allows you to reconstruct a stronger, more sturdy, more robust faith, I think that's fine. I think that's good. During lockdown, a lot of my friends, me including, went through it. During lockdown was the first time me and my Muslim friends really started like speaking about what it is that we believe. And that's when I realized the lay Muslim would spin the lay Christian.
They know their stuff.
100. Not only do they know their stuff,
they know our stuff.
Man's asking me questions about things I don't even know
about. Uni is when I said, do they train you? I said, let me go and give them something.
Their apologetics is on.
A lot of it is like, not proof text, but they've been train a little way. Yeah. When I started to read
that's what I was going
to
say.
That's not what John 10 says.
Yeah.
So I think, what's the one they kept saying? When Jesus says, I'm not good. No, I'm not good. Why do you call me good?
Only God is good.
They're like, Jesus said he's not good?
Or the way they say, give me one time in the Bible.
Where Jesus said, bow down and worship me. That's their line. They love that line.
They love it so much.
That can rock you, though. You'd be like, oh, I don't
No. Look. I can say I'm not married. I can say I'm looking for a woman. I can say, and then I'll say, give me one time. I said, I'm a bachelor.
I was going to say, to give Christians credit, so when you use that whole lay cred Christian, if you're a Muslim that disagree with this, then please comment or like share or whatever. But I would say they are specifically prepared to do apologetics against Christianity specifically. A big part of Islamic belief is we believe in one God. Muhammad is the final messenger. One God. Like, the main thing is oneness. And that is to counteract Christianity.
Trinity.
Which obviously, Islam came after Christianity. So it's very, a long time after as well.
600
so,
years after.
Yeah. So it's a lot. So a lot of, their fundamental beliefs is, I'm not saying it's there to go against Christianity, but it's a huge part. Whereas the everyday Christian isn't growing up
to
even think about Islam, really.
Yeah,
and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Like, unless you want to go into that space of apologetics or debate and stuff like that, then you might do a bit more study on it, fair enough. But it's not fundamental to us. Whereas for Islam, I would argue that it is a little bit more fundamental. And that's why the school that I work in is like 90% Muslim. Even the other day, one of the kids was talking to another kid. I'm talking about primary school, so year four. So he would have been 8, and he was talking to another child, and they were talking about Easter, and he was like, I think the boy made... No, we went to a competition at a Catholic school, and they were looking at Jesus on the wall, whatever, and the kid was like, oh, look, Jesus. Said, oh, no, we're Muslim, we don't say Jesus, we say Isa, blah, blah, blah. And that's 8 years old. That's 8 years old, and they already know, know. And that's not... I don't think that's because they've done extensive study or anything like that, but I think that's just pushed, that's fundamental in Islamic belief, whereas in Christianity, we're not fundamentally taught how to...
I think a part of it, though, is because of comfort, because in the Western world, Christianity has been the majority religion for a long time.
True.
They wouldn't have been... I don't think people would have felt the need to be training people like that if everyone around you is that. True. But I feel like if you go to Christians that are in majority Muslim, they would have had to throw every single objection towards their faith before they actually 100%. Became Christians. So they would be a lot more savvy on that.
Yeah,
so that's why I think that's part of it, for sure. Especially Western world, for sure.
Yeah.
That's good.
You were making a point about deconstruction. I don't think you finished your
What was I saying? I don't even know.
It's sad.
What I was thinking.
You were saying during lockdown and...
Lockdown. Yeah. Oh, no, that gives you a lot of context to my statement. In the Western world, we haven't been trained apologetically because we haven't needed to be trained apologetically. But yeah, that's what made me go and just start... Yeah, my point was pretty much finished. It just made me look into this thing from an apologetic perspective and then allow me to actually have some sort of dialogue with him. Shout out to my man. He knows who he is if he's listening. Still my man.
Even with deconstruction, I've heard at times, and I actually feel for people who have been through periods of what do I believe? Big questions. Mm. But I remember Eric Mason was talking about it's a moral issue. Like a lot of the times, you're deconstructing because you want to sin. You start to form frameworks in your heart that give you that you really want to do this, and you say, "Who made the Bible?
Who made the Bible? I don't know.
Of course, that's not always. There is a challenge of when I'm examining my heart of why do I believe these things? What's the motive of it? Is it actually so that I may know what's right or wrong, or is it so that I may give myself license
find a loophole.
Right.
And live how I actually want to.
It's funny that you mentioned sin, because a lot of deconstruction examples, admittedly, and sometimes I think even if they don't admit it, there definitely is elements. Is that the stance on things like LGBT and the battle with either wanting to partake in it or accept it, or finding it hard to live in a world where you can't accept that, and you sometimes. I've heard that people, because they battle with that so much, it ends up, I heard someone describe it as Jenga blocks, right? You pull one thing, and then I can't get over this LGBT thing, so I've pulled that block out, but then everything else has to come with it. I mean, some people try, progressive Christians try to, I mean, even we were talking about Church of England earlier today, but let's not even get into that. But for some, it's we pulled that block, everything else is coming up with it, really, because I can't just take that. Everything else is going to stand firm. And that, it might not just be LGBT, sometimes it's slavery or treatment of black people or how people have used Christianity to do harm. Right, right. So there's different blocks people can bring out.
Church, yeah, church, a lot of people.
So I think it's harsh. I think it's harsh to just say, oh, because people want to see. When you make it as simplistic as that, because there's elements to that is actually foundationally true. But when you make it that simplistic, the deconstructor or the person that's left the faith would argue and say, no, that's not it, it's because of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So we don't want to make it as simple as that. But I do think there's elements of certain moral issues, whether it be LGBT, slavery, racism, whatever it is, that, yes, I can't get over that. So everything else, and I'm going to make sure I find everything else that's going to support it so this block can come crashing down. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look for it, if you genuinely look for it, yeah, you'll find whatever you're looking for. I think when your heart is to say, I want this thing to come crashing down, you'll find stuff. Like you'll find stuff to allow the thing to crash. And that's what ends up people leaving the faith and all them other stuff.
I think that's why it's important, even in 1 Peter 3:15, where we get that apology. No, this is where, which no, where we get the important. It's where we get the apologetics thing, bro. Come on, bro.
Nah, listen.
But what you said, like, if you in your heart you want to deconstruct, run the whole thing to the ground,
you can.
That's why we are encouraged at first, before we even encouraged to give a defense for this thing. Sanctify the Lord first.
Amen.
As holy in your heart, like sanctify him first, like revere him first, and then you go and start giving a defense and whatever. Because if you don't do it, if you do the other way around, or as you said, you want to tear this thing down, you will. Yeah. Similarly, if you revere him first and go from that angle, it allows you to move accordingly.
Right, because the motivator for that is their heart saying, I don't like that. Mm. Like I don't want to believe that. Then it's like, okay, then you've become your greatest authority. Then you're no longer submitting your thoughts, your actions, or whatever to what scripture says. Because if you really want to call yourself a pursuer of the truth, as a lot of people in like this kind of era want to call themselves, like that they say, oh, we're pursuing the truth, the real whatever, then you have to learn to find things that you might not like, but accept as truth. Like, I can't, as much as I want to say that it's not real, like I could say traffic is not real. If I run into the road now, I'll get hit by a car. Do you know what I'm saying? But it's just like, there are things that we just have to accept as true if they really are true, and not because we don't like them. Mm-hmm. If we don't like them, then we need to learn to pray and ask God to help us to submit our thoughts to and understand that his ways are higher than our ways, right? And that's the process that needs to happen. That kind of like what you were saying, that sanctification, but there's another word I want to use, but like in terms of your heart changing and becoming more like sober towards those kind of things, rather than just being like, oh, like this is the way I feel, so it has to be this way.
So for people your age, like, what do you think are like the common issues that you guys are facing?
Stumbling blocks.
Yeah, like what are the stumbling blocks? What are the things that are like going through your mind? What do you think are like typical challenges?
Or even like your friends that are not Christian.
Yeah,
like, what were they? When you talk to them about God, what's like the most common, like, oh, I'm not that.
Okay, I think their expectations of what they were told, their expectations of like the Christian faith should be in terms of how you should experience it, were just not met. Some of them were either given like just unrealistic expectations. Some of them had expectations themselves that were unrealistic. And then when they experienced it themselves, they were like, this whole thing is fake. Also, they saw people that didn't practice what they preached. Like, it's like one of the woes of the scribes and the Pharisees that Jesus talks about in Matthew 27, right? They preach what they don't practice. And seeing that is so painful to see, because you see people that are like, you should be like this. You see them behind closed doors and they're not like that. That feeds into church hurt, that feeds into, because the way people are going to teach in this kind of, when you're behind that pulpit, you're authoritarian, no matter how you like. So you can say some really harmful stuff and it can affect people. I mean, I could like, but I think what ends up happening is when people now have to like live life as a Christian themselves, and they have to make that decision themselves, they realize that without actually, there are so many songs and verses and whatever that talk about living life of Jesus as being freeing, but it won't be experienced as freedom if it's if that isn't there, if that isn't there for them, it's just a set of regulations that they have to live by. And they're like, well, my friends are doing all this and they're having fun, they're living life fine. They're not like wallowing on the floor or whatever, like they're fine. So why can't I just do that? Why can't I just have fun? Or why can't I just, because this feels more restricting than freeing. And I think because of that, it's just like, well, this doesn't really make sense. And when I've asked questions, I don't really get answers. So let me just leave then. Like, it just doesn't really make sense. Yeah. And I think logically following it, it's a logical thing to do. If you're asking questions and you're not getting answers and people aren't really living to a standard that they're preaching to you, then why would you stay in?
Yeah.
Why would you stay in that belief system that's making you, like, it's uncomfortable. You have to live as an alien. Like, you have, like, the way the world system is, you have to actually say, no, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong, against a multitude of people. It's uncomfortable. Why would you want to do that if you don't think there's any benefit to it?
Yeah. Some other things that my people go through, there's an apathy towards this stuff in general, Christianity. Someone says, Jesus died for you. It's like, why? Safe. Like, if one of my friends says, I love you, so I'm gonna jump in this river and die for you, you're gonna call them a clown. Like, what's the significance of his jumping in that river, or of the Lord dying? So so in the world, we're brought up in such a way that we are taught that intrinsically humans are good by nature. Why am I gonna now come subscribe to a faith system that requires me to acknowledge that I'm first sinful? Right? It feels it doesn't really resonate like that for some people. So there's an apathy there. It's like, he's died for me, safe, but I don't really need that. I'm good already. What else is there? You spoke about authority. I think we need to perhaps redeem our understanding of authority, because my generation especially, we want to live free, essentially. Yeah. We want to live lives of freedom. And there's a misunderstanding. Everyone thinks that freedom is like freedom from authority. When it comes to the Lord, those who are free are submitted to the Lord. Those who are free are called slaves to righteousness, right? So there's kind of like a interesting contrast painted between freedom and slavery. Those who are slaves to righteousness are truly free. Those who do their own thing and are free are truly slaves, but to sin, right? So
he's even doing preaching.
Don't do that. So yeah, a redeeming understanding of authority, and then there was one more. But you know, you might not bring you.
Be free.
I actually forgot. What was the third one? Authority, apathy.
That's your 3.7.
Man, that's the authority, apathy application.
It's giving us a benediction, isn't it?
I
can't remember the last one, innit?
Sorry, man, there were many things.
Do you think like race politics affects your generation more than maybe generations?
100%. Bare people think Christianity is a white man's religion.
But
that's been going on.
I thought it was bad to handle them.
I feel like it's happening even more.
Even more.
Yeah. Especially at the, did you see during the BLM thing, people were like, oh, I want to talk to my ancestors and whatever. Yeah. Like,
I mean, there is definitely that people are looking into like African spirituality. What do you mean, like, missionaries came into Africa and told them to like destroy their idols and why wasn't our like gods like good enough
respected? You know, even the other day, I know we said, well,
Church of England, innit?
Yeah. You see that thing?
Yeah, I saw it.
The principal sent me the thing. He emailed it to me and showed me. Church of England apologized for not respecting religious diversity in sub-Saharan Africa when missionaries went. They apologized.
Everything, man.
Like, what does that even mean?
Church of England in the mud, bro.
What does that even mean?
What does that mean for
it was Church of England after saying that.
Man, shout out my gang, bro. That's weird when you're considering the fact of like the light of the gospel.
Yes.
What that means.
Yes.
So you're even thinking of like Acts 17.
Yes.
And yet people come in. Is that in Ephesians where people just come and destroy their idols? So like there is a sense in which when the gospel is presented,
it's in Ephesus.
Church Ephesus. So the response should be that people turn away from their idols and trust in a true and living God. But yeah, so there is that. Like, I think there is that. I didn't know if it was still present that like Christianity is a white man's religion, but of course, in
certain circles. For what I've seen anyway, like different circles of Anna and stuff like that, I definitely think for sure, like, people view it as that, which is really unfortunate because I mean, even historically, Christianity is more of an African religion than it is a European one. It's very, but anyway.
Yeah, even when you think of like black majority churches, like where the pastor's black and everyone like, how is it a white man's religion when bro, the first time I saw white people as Christians, I think I was in uni.
Yeah, same.
That's such an interesting point.
I generally grew up thinking white people were atheists.
Yeah, same.
Like, wow. That's what my parents, you know, they don't believe in God. When I got to uni, I was like, oh, like, white people are Christians too.
First of all, Christian Union, I was amazed. English people can pray.
Interesting. Is there any other things you've seen from like, or Femi, have you seen anything from the young?
I think the things that you guys said, the things that you pointed out, I've seen it. I think the idea of like there's authority, but also the idea of like objective truth. Like you spoken it, touched on it, like the idea that there isn't an objective truth, like everyone has their own truth. And there isn't like what's even when you talk about like let's say missionaries going to Africa, for example, to do what they've done, or even like the atrocities that some unfortunately, crusaders. Some people, crusaders, and even slavery and stuff like that, all that stuff, horrible, terrible, terrible things, right? And don't let what I'm about to say take away from the fact that those are horrible, horrendous crimes, right? That was one specifically, missionaries going to Africa, but those horrendous crimes, right? You can actually still take away all of that and say, okay, well, was what they were bringing true?
Right. The question.
So the question is, oh, let's take the missionaries to Africa thing, right? And then Africans destroying the idols. Cool. You can look at that outside of everything and say, oh, that's terrible. But not if what they brought was true so much. So let's tackle that first. Because if, for example, missionaries brought medicine or like better medicine to Africans and then Africans threw away their bad medicine, right? Most rational people wouldn't then say, oh, the practice of them throwing away their bad medicine was bad because that's the medicine that they used for centuries.
Right.
You wouldn't say that because you would not, knowing that the medicine that the people brought was better for them, hopefully, a rational person would say, oh, actually, yes, the African people threw away what they used to use and now they're using this thing, but because this thing is better, it's a good thing. And now they've moved to something good. Similarly to them bringing Christianity, right? Like, if you tackle the idea that Christianity is true and good, then yes, hopefully you'd be able to say, okay, yes, they had these other gods and they threw them away, but what they've got was better. So I think tackling the idea, rather than just looking at it as, oh, we used to do this, we don't do this anymore, so that's a bad thing, and actually tackling, okay, was what those missionaries bringing true? Is it true? Is it good? And if you can go to that, and if you can do that, and then you still say no because you don't believe Christianity is true, that's a different argument. But if you actually tackle whether it is good and is true, then that's a whole different thing. So like, yeah. So the idea that there could be an objective truth, like Christianity could be objectively true, and tackling that, and if it is true, that means a lot of things, and that means a lot of things are untrue, and that means a lot of things are bad, and you have to accept that.
Right.
And you can't have multiple truths. Like in my opinion, anyway, you can't have multiple truths. There's one truth, right? So I think you should tackle it and accept that. And I don't think that's something that's done in these generations as much. It's everyone's truth. Everyone has their own truth. Even like all religions could be true. Like every it's almost like Hinduism, right? Like
everyone's touching everything.
Every god can be true. Like we can all come. Like that's practically impossible.
There is a growing space of tolerance. At my workplace, and it's even tolerance. It's a positive thing, but like there's every religious society at my workplace. So like we're part of a.
Yeah.
I can't even say what the group is called because I'm exposed to my work. But like it's a group, and there's like Muslim, Sikh, Hindus. And it's like they just promote all the events. And of course, it's a blessing because you can promote your Christian events freely. But in another sense, it's wait, are all these things true? It's the life we're in. So there is a growing tolerance or belief tolerance in the sense of that we can all coexist and we don't need to like say.
Do you think what's the UK's tolerance to Christianity? I don't think so.
I don't say tolerance to Christianity, but there's a growing tolerance for all religions.
I don't even know.
Yeah.
I think
what it is. There's a growing tolerance for people to practice their faith, but to keep it private.
Keep it private.
And to not bring it into like the public space or the world. Whatever.
I don't think so, you know.
They will say you can have it, you can just have it back there. Just don't bring it.
I think we're moving away from even that.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. We might not be there yet, but But I think we're even moving away from that. Like, even just holding Christian-specific beliefs, we're getting to a point where that is an affront to people. That's an offence to people. More and more. More and more every day, that's an offence. Even if it is done in private and not in their face. Because you believe... I mentioned it 100 times already in this episode, but the LGBT stuff specifically... Me saying I'm Christian. I'm not even like trying to get onto that, but it's an affront to it. It's like just me by saying a Christian is so even if I'm doing it in my private life,
I go, you're trying to say,
even if I'm doing it in my private life, just me by doing that, it's an affront to that. So like, I think we're moving away from a time where we can even do that. Which again,
fair.
Two things I've mentioned a lot today: LGBT and Islam. We don't have that in the same way with Islam. Because Islam hold a lot of the same beliefs towards LGBT as Christians do. And even in some cases, well, actually, I don't really want to get into the Islam thing, but let's just stay as they hold similar beliefs. I won't go any deeper than that. But that saying you're a Muslim is way more celebrated and more tolerant, and I don't think has the same impact than saying you're a Christian. So I think
there's less pushback. I don't know if there's...
I think it's because though we grew up when being a Muslim wasn't celebrated. It was if we go back to primary school. Okay, us love primary school. It was very different. Like growing up. That's hilarious. But yeah, listen. More time when you're growing up, you would ask someone what faith they are. More time it was Christian. If you ask them if someone said they were Muslim, like. There were a lot of jokes that were flying around back then They got it bad. So it's a thing where...
I don't think that's happening now, though.
No, exactly. That's what I'm trying to say. Nah, now it's a thing where...
Like, with 9/11, all of that, they were just saying...
Islamophobia was a real
thing. It was a real, real thing. So now it's a thing where people are very much hands off, do your thing, because you might have gone through it. So you have space to do your thing. And quickly on the blackness and Christianity, I think in our generation there's a big a desire to be authentic. And authenticity to us now speaks to us being connected to our lineage. Going back to primary school as well, we grew up in a time where the black people would take the mick out of black people for being too black.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Now that doesn't...
That word you used to use... Anyway,
listen. Yeah. It would... Black people taking the mick out of other black people because they're black, right? Nowadays, our Afro-Caribbean heritage more time is celebrated.
Yeah.
Right? So, going back to the authenticity piece, being connected with our lineage, being connected with our ancestors. So, a lot of my friends are like, if my ancestors didn't have the praise of Yahweh on their lips, why should I? How am I being authentic to myself, authentic to my blackness? And that's why I love the work of Dr. Vince Bantu. Any of you man heard? This is why I love Dr. Vince Bantu.
He's a
lecturer.
Bantu is so...
Vince Bantu was on our second episode of Black Report.
He was here.
You might not kidding me.
Wait, where did he sit?
No, it was online. He's American. Please tell me
he's even Israel's lecturer. He told me. Yeah, he's even Israel. He is a lecturer at Fuller Seminary School. He specializes, I think, in some ancient Semitic languages.
He's
translating some never before translated text from early African Christianity that have never been translated, essentially showing that the praise of Yahweh was on the lips of our ancestors, and hopefully that can do something to help connect Christianity in terms of how it does affirm our blackness for the people in my generation. That would be a beautiful thing. There was something else I wanted to say about this. Oh gosh, I'm too excited.
There's something I wanted to say very, very quickly
on the blackness and Christianity thing as well. Is that I think one big thing is that, especially second generation immigrants, some of us feel very detached from like the motherland, innit? And we feel like there's some way that we could be like connected back there. And then maybe think about our religious beliefs. Type in Jesus on Google, who do you see? A white man. And that's what you just see over and over and over again. So obviously, even though we know, you can literally search Jesus Christ real at the end and it will show a different picture. But it's funny, isn't it? But I think that because of that, like, it just creates this image of, wow, like, this has really been entrenched throughout my whole, like, my ancestors didn't, what they weren't this way, but they were this way, and I want to feel connected to them. But, like, even if you read in the Bible as well, like, you can see how proud they were of their ancestors. They were like, our forefathers did this, our forefathers did that. And I think there's nothing wrong with honouring our ancestors, but there's a problem with worshipping them. That's when it gets to the issue. Like, so I think even when we're talking about that deconstruction, reconstruction thing, part of someone's reconstruction would be looking into, like, their family history or looking into whatever, because that could be a healthy way of expressing that desire to feel connected to that. But not going all the way to be like, okay, yeah, like, what they spiritually believed as well was correct and stuff like that.
Ties itself totally into, like, identity. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Who are, you know, big questions that we're all thinking through.
Yeah.
So earlier in the pod, you said you're in seminary, yeah?
Yes.
I remember when we first spoke, you were considering seminary as well, right?
Yeah.
You guys are young. Why seminary? First of all, explain what seminary is.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, like, yeah, why seminary?
So seminary is, theological college, I guess, theological school or Bible university.
Where, like,
super Christians. It's the way she says like, it's stuff with a straight face. I can't even tell what she's drinking. You know what she said? Oh, I thought you guys were zealous. I was like, what? It's such a straight face.
So theological school.
Who
typically you go to seminary? What drew you to seminary? What's drawing you potentially to seminary?
Okay, so the people that usually go are people that are training to be in some form of ministry, or like they want it to be like their occupation in terms of, like, they're like being a lecturer or like those kind of things, right? And for me, it has to do with around the time I got converted. So when I first got converted, I was binging a lot of, like, apologetics videos. So, like, you're cross-examined, you're wretched, you're like all of them. I was just, it's tired free. So I think specifically Frank Turek, though, I really loved how people would ask him so many questions and he would just pick the questions apart, like, just so easily and just bring answers, not in a way to, like, run away from the question, but actually deal with it. And I was noticing all these guys were having all this, like, I was like, where are they getting this knowledge from? So I remember just Googling, like, where to study, like, formally this, because especially for me with, like, my music as well, as an artist, I didn't want to, a lot of the time I found myself representing the faith, like isolated as well, because there's not a lot of people that are, like, have the same beliefs as I do. So I wanted to be able to defend the faith well, and that doesn't happen through, like, just picking up random books from the bookshelf and reading them. I wanted to get formally educated. So I think when I found, okay, seminary, I was like, okay, that's cool. This is at 2019. I was like, okay, cool, I'd love to do that one day. And then eventually, like, that my church as well kind of saw, they were just, they started encouraging me to start, like, start preaching and stuff like that as well. And they were like, have you considered seminary? And I was like, yeah, I've been thinking of doing it for a while. And then that was basically it. Really, it was just that kind of, I started preaching at church as well, and then it just kind of worked together. And
when did you, how old were you when you started preaching?
Literally last year, bro.
14.
Oh. Well, I mean, you're so funny. Well, I mean, at uni, I did, like, me and my friends did, like, do a little, like, fellowship thing at uni and whatever. But I didn't really know what I was doing there. Like, I wasn't really, there was no exposition, there was no commentary from here. There was none of that. It was just, let's read, what does it mean to you, man? That's it, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't, yeah, so, like, that, like, last year, I would say, like, last year, like, May time was when I started, like fully, like, doing, like, the exegetical stuff and then whatever. So that's when I would say it was like both of those roads kind of met and it was like, okay, cool, this is where I'm going. And yeah, it's one of the littest things ever. At least you might be the littest thing I've ever done.
Mad. Mad.
So far. For real.
What's a typical day at seminary?
Ooh.
And the second question is,
Mary, you're going to get me going.
Okay, do you think more people should go to seminary?
100%. Ooh. 110%. Not enough people go, man. Not enough people go.
Wow.
I think if anyone, this is my personal opinion, if anyone has that kind of attitude of, like, questioning a lot of stuff, like, asking bare questions and never really being satisfied with what people's, like, they're always, like, picking up, but, like, they just naturally gravitate towards, like, trying to find answers, I feel like that's the place for them, because I see it as almost like a gift that someone has given, like a God-given gift that someone's given, because when people come to those answers, they believe it with way more, like, with way more fervence, with way more, like, they have way more reverence for God. Like, the people that are writing these systematic theology textbooks are people that have wrestled with so much. And that's the reason why they write it with so much passion. They don't write as people that are detached. So then when you're preaching as well, you're preaching with way more like this is actually true. Yeah. This is actually like, do you know what I'm saying? But I don't think people see it as that. But yeah, so what was your
typical day?
Was that typical day? Okay, so it depends on the day, obviously. But okay, so I'll be like, okay, wake up. Breakfast is meant to be at 8, but I miss breakfast because I'm like 8 is just a bit too whatever. So then we have a morning devotion for like 40 minutes. So this is like we take turns to lead a service and like give a sermon, like a quick 15-20 minute sermon. Then we'll like sing a hymn. Then 10-minute break. Then we have our first hour. Which is language. So the 2 days in the morning would be Hebrew. The next 2 days would be Greek. So we open up like the actual, because they've given us like Hebrew Old Testament, Greek New Testament. So we open up that, be like translating verses and whatever, practicing that, like the grammar stuff like that. Greek is mad complicated. But anyway, then we'll have like, that's when we'd have like our full stretch of the module for that day. So that could be church history. It could be systematic theology. It could be contemporary society. That's one that we do where we learn about like the move from like modernism to postmodernism and like how architecture has been influenced by the Renaissance period. And like, because a lot of people like talk about, you know, when you're trying to say something to someone, they're like, you're preaching, man, you're preaching to me. Like, stop, like, you're preaching to me. But things like adverts and TV shows are preaching. They're preaching. Yeah, yeah. They're preaching to people. Yeah, that's one of the first things that our lecturers spoke about, is that people are being preached to all the time, but they don't realize. They're telling you about what you should value, what you shouldn't value, what you should, all those kind of things. So those are the kind of things that, like, I think are very important as well for, like, different ministers to think about as well. But that's basically it. Let me just go through that, and then like that would be like what we, and then you get to ask questions and there's debates and there's, yeah, it's not just like everything is taught and you just say, okay, this is the truth, accept it. Like, people get to have back and forth and whatever. So
I think this is even beautiful that we're speaking about this, because I think the fact that we even call it seminary school shows that we're influenced a lot by Americans. Right, because usually the UK more time is called theological education, college. So I'm saying it's beautiful that hopefully the next generation will have actually people within the UK that they can look up to and whatnot, in terms of people doing this. But for me, the desire to potentially go into church leadership started when I was like maybe 14. 14, 15.
Wow.
No, it's not. Listen, it was just very, very early.
Here I am.
Obviously, I was young. You know, I remember. I thought it was just a thing that everyone experienced when you're young and you first get converted. I thought it was a thing where everyone feels once you've actually get become born again, you actually get serious about this thing, it's like everyone just gets mad zealous.
Yeah,
right? So I'm asking my sister, like, what do you feel like one day you're gonna like preach your pastor? She was like, no. I was like, oh, okay, first. But again at 16 it came back, and then 18 it came back, but it was always a thing where I don't even know where to start. I don't even know who to ask. I don't know where to go. As I said, we were in and out of church, so in a very funny way, like, my faith developed outside of the context of the local church, which I wouldn't recommend. I had to learn how to be submitted to a local church after going through uni and whatnot. But yeah, so I got plugged into a local church after university, and then they started to confirm what I had been feeling. I didn't articulate to them. I just said, let me just go and serve and do whatever. But then slowly they started inviting me to preach, to do this, to do that. And then eventually they asked about church leadership and whatnot. So that's when I was like, cool, wonderful. This is kind of like a green light. Let me actually look into this properly. When it comes to seminary school, I think for me, if you feel like you're called to be a minister, the question is not, are you going to be educated? you're gonna have to study. Is it gonna be formal or informal? And it doesn't have to be formal, of course, in a seminary school or theological college. There's so many fantastic ministers who don't have that opportunity. But if you have the opportunity, why wouldn't you take it? Like, I think very formationally as well. So I'm thinking what I do at this age is gonna be with me for the longest in terms of my life. It's going to be with me for the rest of my life. So I have the opportunity to get formed by men and women of God that have been faithful in this thing, that have lived the life that I also want to live faith-wise, will give me the exegetical tools to be able to mine the scriptures for a lifetime. Why would I not want to do this at this age? Mm. Why would I want to wait until there's wife, kids, you know what I'm trying to say? It's going to be a lot more to come on now.
Samson said, oh.
No. I didn't say that.
Listen, but no, 1 Corinthians 7, like, it makes you read it differently. When you consider seminary, you read it very differently, because like, rah, this is different. But I'm thinking this is a beautiful age to do it. I desire to do this. I don't exactly know what it's going to look like in terms of after getting the master's in theology, God willing. But as long as I can use the scriptures to do it, whatever it is after, I think I'll be very happy with that.
I think as well, sorry, there's something that I want to clarify a little bit. Like, in terms of that, like, I think one of the signals is people that want to ask questions and stuff like that and are looking for answers and stuff like that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that there's someone that has to go, because there needs to be that internal call of like wanting to look for answers, but also wanting to share and have that kind of communication, whatever, with other people. But then the external one of like people that attend your church or like godly men around you in your leadership or whatever, saying, have you considered? Have you? Yeah. And that's what I feel like is I didn't want to just say, you know what I'm saying? It's just like, just think, oh, like, and just, let me go.
You guys are young, and we talk about like, I think the beautiful thing about being young is the zeal, the energy, isn't it? But when people always talk about like young men in ministry, there's always obviously the dangers of like, all the negatives, XYZ, yeah.
What negatives?
Pride. Zeal without like foresight. Without wisdom, arrogance, puffed up, XYZ. So how do you guys like protect against those dangers that you're seeking? Like,
discipleship. That's it. It's that simple.
Break down discipleship.
Yeah, break it down.
Being discipled by much more experienced, older, like, men. That I think, just like, that's it. If you're discipled by them, then you get to like avoid so much of the, because they see it, because they were you before. Like, they were the young guy that thought, I'm going to preach one time, I'm going to be the next Charles Spurgeon.
Everyone thinks that.
Everyone thinks that, right? But like, they've seen that and they know how to, like, do you know what I'm saying? Just whatever. Like, I remember one time, I've been enjoying being discipled by like just great pastors for like the last 2-3 years. And I remember one time, I think I was like, I can't remember how the conversation started, but I think I was like, this was like the transition from the church that I was at to the church I'm placed at now as a trainee. And then after, I remember saying to the pastor, I was just talking about the move, and then he just goes, oh yeah, maybe another day there'll be another young man that's just like you, who walks through the doors, who thinks he knows everything as well. It was a positive, but it was obviously, it was a joke, innit? It was a joke, but like, we laughed about it, but like, that sounded mad, innit?
It sounded mad.
I was laughing because he can be candid like that with me, and he can just be like,
so good,
you have been like, do you know what I'm saying? But you need that. You need that good disciple. And I feel like discipleship or like whatever has been glamorized to the point where people think it needs to be this like shiny, flashy, like, that's my mentor, guys. Mm. Like, that's my, like, it doesn't need to be. It's often very quiet, very consistent, very, and sometimes it doesn't feel comfortable. Like, sometimes it takes a lot of time, effort, but that's what the Great Commission is, though, isn't it? Some people think the Great Commission is like just evangelism. Like, it's meant to be making disciples. That's actually what it's meant to be. Like, it's meant to be that, like, doing life with people and inviting them to have some kind of proximity to where they can see what you're like behind closed doors. You actually live this. Like, that's what it's meant to be like.
I think that's a great question. I remember my friends asking me that question. Are you not scared of falling and da 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 da? And I'm so happy she asked it, because the first answer I gave was, I'm on my P's and Q's, I do this, I do this, I do that. And then she was like, what happens when you don't? I said, and I was like, so beautiful, because I forgot like fundamentals. This thing is fundamentally about grace. It's about what the Lord has done that I could not do fundamentally. So I think as a minister, being reminded of that, either having good friends or being discipled by men who are going to remind you that you're going to need to rely on grace in this thing. You are going to need to be consistently on your knees in prayer, asking for humility, because when you're ministering, the church unintentionally, I think, let's just say they gas you. Like you, it's easy to just feel gassed. You know why Paul says that knowledge puffs you up? Because when you read and whatever, you can sometimes rely on your intellect and whatever it is. So being around people who remind you who has even graced you to do this, who is sustaining you through this, and who's going to perfect the work that he's even doing through you is so, so important. So good friends is one. Remembering grace, being discipled, all of these one-on-ones, you don't outgrow them.
3.7 again.
You don't outgrow them.
I've got one last question,
I know we're running out of time.
I've got so many questions. This might be a bit ignorant, but...
Not ignorant.
But how do you... Well, you specifically, Samson, because you're in seminary, even though it's a plan for you, but like, how do you... Do you... Because if... If I was to look at you and even meet you, I'd be surprised that you are in seminary. Because I don't meet many people. That's not even to include the age. Just the fact that you're black. Like, it's, like, I don't meet many people that are like that. We even spoke about on the pod, like, about, like, do we have a lot of young black men going into things like pastoring and stuff like that? Do you feel like there's a dearth of it? So, like, do you feel out of place? Do you feel like...
Mad.
Or do you feel even more important because you're a representative of something? Or maybe I'm just ignorant and there's loads of people in seminary that are, like, just like you. I don't know. Nah. But, yeah, I would assume not. But
you see, he came for the open day,
so you see. Like, so do you know any black people in seminary? Worldwide. Personally.
No.
I don't think so. Okay, I mean, that answered my question there. So
actually, I know people that have gone, like black people that have gone, but not like right now, not currently.
So I know on your age, I'm assuming as well.
No.
Yeah, so I guess my question...
I'm one of the youngest people there.
Yeah, my question is two-pointed in the sense of, do you feel out of place or do you feel either, do you feel your role is even more important to either like encourage people to join you or like just be a, like a better representation.
I'll be real. Day one, I felt mad out of place. Mm. I felt mad because I will never forget before I went there, one of my pastors told me, he said, look, let's just call a spade. You're going to a place where you're going to be in a minority. You're going to be one of the youngest people there. You're probably going to be one of the only like black people there, this, that, and the other. There's going to be people that are going to try and make you into something that you're not. Mm. Like, not the institution itself, but everyone around has a particular... everyone around has a particular culture of being. Like, they know... They've done church for years, and they're like, this is how church should be. This is his words. He said, don't become another white middle-class preacher. Like, that's what he said.
He said that straight up to me,
And then on top of that, whilst I was there, because of, like, the fact of how, like, whatever, I did feel out of place, I spoke to the principal. Principal, again, sat me down. He said the exact same thing. Like, don't, like, you're you. Like, don't. I was saying to him, like, oh, like, I don't know if I can, like, fit here. He said, that's the point. You're not meant to fit. Like, don't fit. He told me, don't fit. Because, do you know what I'm saying? So, like, being there, even though I did feel out of place, I've got literally the whole institution, like, backing me as, like, do you know what I'm saying? And being like, the point of you being here isn't for us to make carbon copies of ourselves and for be like, oh, this is a me junior, this is whatever. But it's to actually make you into the person that God has called you to be and like grow you into that. Because they've spoken to me about how there's people that I'll be able to reach that they won't be able to because there's completely different culture. Like they just don't, whatever. So what they can do is educate me on the fundamentals, teach me those like whatever that we all agree on, because this is the amazing thing about the gospel, right? That there's people from so many different cultures, ages, walks of life, but they're all saved and changed by the same Jesus, right? Mm. Like, it's insane, isn't it? Yeah. So even when there's people that are literally generations away from me in terms of age, we're still able to talk about the same Jesus and be like, yeah, like, this is our experience of this is very similar. Mm. Like we had that time when we realized our heart was changing, and our heart is still being changed, and the Spirit is still convicting, and there's that. So like I was saying in the beginning, I did feel that, but I don't feel that anymore at all. And we have conversations about things like different, like cultural differences or like racial differences and whatever, because for me, I haven't had experiences that they've had, and for them, they haven't had experiences that I've had as well. But because I guess it's a safe space, because we're believers in it, so it's like we can just talk about things and converse about them and be like, okay, how is this and how is that? So yeah.
Encouraging, man. That's encouraging.
It is mad encouraging.
Oh, so it was a blessing talking to you guys.
Yeah, man. Running out of time. I feel like I was listening to an episode of Black Bria. I was just like, oh, yeah, I've got to talk to you.
Oh, my God. So funny.
You guys are very encouraging, man.
You've got a podcast.
Yes. Okay, so yeah, Evergreen Podcast. Evergreen Podcast. Me and my good friend Roof. We started that.
Roof, come on, man. Mm. God's the people.
We call it a meditation of good things. We try and speak about how the gospel message can just like should penetrate every single area of our lives. Very similar to Black Berea. So it's beautiful to be here, and yeah, we look up to you, man, innit? So it's
because we're older than you guys.
Absolutely. This is beautiful, man. Thank you for bringing us on.
Man. You guys paved the way. You paved the way.
You got music. You plug in your music.
Yeah.
Guys, Samson is cold, by the way.
Hard.
Samson's cold. Cold's bitter. Thank you. Sick producer.
Listen.
Well, they've done it now.
Samson on Spotify.
Samson on Spotify, all caps. Samson M _ on Instagram. Yeah, that's it. That's it, really. Yeah, man.
That's Black Berea, man.
Crazy.
I've got so many more questions.
I know. Look at that.